and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to all of you. I hope you enjoyed Rachel Maddow's show, those of you who get it. Today was your first day. Very exciting to walk into a studio that's already full of juice and action and excitement. Usually Riley, you know, I come down, Riley comes down a half hour before me to drink his grape soda,
some
candy, do all those secret things he does behind our back.
That's right.
And I just come down, it's just Riley and Kalo sitting here going, you ready to go? Today, no. There was action. Action in the studio. Things were happening. Right, Riley? Did you notice that?
I noticed it. There was a buzz in the room.
Where'd you go hide and drink your grape soda today?
Right next door. Turn the lights on. Jason, the overnight guy, was cool. And I just go over, read a little bit. I have me some Twizzlers, and, the usual thing. The
breakfast of champions for Mark Riley.
There you go.
Snapple and Twizzlers.
But hey, I got rid of the coffee though.
Yeah, I know. I you tried this once before, Riley. I hate to break it.
I know that.
I remember that you put your foot down. That enough was enough. You were drinking too much.
I've decided since it's getting warm out, I'm going to substitute Jolt Cola for coffee.
I know. Now you're on the Jolt. That's going to work against you because there's sugar involved in that.
That's okay. I can brush my teeth, get rid of the sugar. I'm not worried about that.
It's not that brushing the teeth. It's metabolizing the sugar and then crashing down within minutes.
Oh, no. That won't happen.
I'm not worried about it.
I got to sleep this afternoon. I know that already because I got a late meeting tonight. So.
Do you want to go into that? Yes. Are we going to talk about that?
No.
You just want to drop that one and we'll leave it there?
That's right.
Kayla, how you doing, man? You all right?
I'm good, buddy.
I think I got a little allergies, but I don't have allergies. So I'm trying to lie to myself that I have allergies so I don't acknowledge that I have another cold. Maybe this vegetarian thing isn't really working out. Dan Pashman, of course, says, you know why you have a cold? Because you have no immune system because you're a vegetarian. What's that got to do with anything? That's not true. That is not true. Am I right? You guys don't know. What do you know? Meat doesn't give you an immunity. Meat gives you steroids, antibiotics, things you don't need in your system. And, flesh and muscle. Why am I doing this, Chris? That's what the big question is. And a lot of people may be getting tired of it. But you know what? I'm tired of it myself. So until I stop being tired of it, I'm not going to stop talking about it. And my wife is on now. She's here in town. And she's been here for a day, and we argued a little bit. I'm not gonna go into it. It's just interesting that I've been living this weird ascetic life of a morning show monk. You know what I mean? Out there in Astoria by myself. With a very strict series of habits. Getting up in the middle of the night, having the coffee, washing the dishes, cooking the food. And now she's here, and now we've got to integrate all that, and it's very exciting. Yesterday, when we went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is one of the grand things one can do here in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
We went and saw that Diane Arbus show, which you saw.
Yeah. Wonderful show.
Unbelievable. I've been a fan for years. She changed my life. When I looked at the Diane Arbus book when I was like 12 or 13 years old, like my mother had it because she was a member of the Museum of Modern Art. We used to get the books.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking through that thing and going, what is going on in this world? Where does this stuff come from? But then you start to realize that she not only changed photography, she changed everything. She changed the entire way that people look at people. You got, like our guest last week, Todd Solondz.
Yeah.
There'd be no Todd Solondz without Diane Arbus.
You're absolutely right. And the thing about Arbus's work is I'm not usually affected by photographs. Just not. Mm-hmm. I don't like them that much. I don't take them that often. But when you see a collection of things like this where you have people in a completely natural state, whether it's somebody walking down the street or a couple dancing or a couple of nudists that are sitting at their house in Jersey. And of course, this is all in the 50s. And she had a thing about burlesque. She had a thing about freak shows. She had a thing about, transsexuals and transgender people.
Uh-huh.
All of this, she enjoyed photographing. She enjoyed capturing them in natural moments.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It showed the humanity of these people, and it showed that they were real people with real lives, and she just had an eye. Because my wife and I were walking through it, and I apparently was in sort of, auto-disagree mode, which I get into my wife a lot. Do you ever get that? I don't even know where it comes from, but it's just like whatever she's saying before she's even done, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, No, really? No, I don't think so. You ever do that, Chris?
All the time.
It's like auto-disagree mode, and I don't know why I lock into it,
It's definitely a guilty pleasure.
Oh, and I'm doing the things. It's a guilty pleasure?
Yeah, I kind of like it.
I think it's a control thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like you can't have any opinions right now because I'm here. Your opinions can't be relevant or important because I'm here. I'm the person with the opinions. But that's why I love my wife, because she's so tough and smart and just will not put up with any of it. Though she did infect me with this you know virus.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, welcome to the you know show. She did it. She took responsibility for that because she does it all the time. But the Arbus show, I thought that it was well put together, and there was a very historical context. And what was fascinating was that she was doing fashion photography throughout her career. And I think that part of the reason why she was able to see so clearly into this, you know, this sort of nether region or underworld of humanity. I don't even know if I want to call it that because that's not fair. To see humanity in the light that she saw it in was she had to photograph fashion models all day and sort of create these layouts to sell clothing, and that would create a type of bitterness that would make you want to dig a little deeper if you had the poetic sensibility into what the human condition was really like.
You know, it's interesting. Some of the stuff that she did was of some really, really, like the balcony scenes in movie theaters.
Yeah.
Where she took a very mundane scene and created, I mean, it looked like Castle Grayskull or something.
Yeah.
Because of the way the lighting hit,
sure.
The fact that everything was on an incline. It's just some incredible stuff. I think it runs out this weekend, though, doesn't it? Does it end this weekend? The Arbus exhibit?
I think it's running a little longer. I'll do a little research if people are interested in seeing it. I think it's definitely worthwhile. And I also, you know, speaking of that, but it captures a New York, a burlesque New York, a transgender New York that was before the 60s, like in the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, so it was before any sort of sexual revolution. And it's just fascinating, the impact and the sexuality of some of the pictures before there was that sense of any type of social acceptance.
True.
And also that whole burlesque scene, you know, in a related story where we learned today that New York is getting rid of all its sex shops.
What?
Unless they're zoned properly.
Yeah.
That they're
yeah.
pushing them all out. Not that there was many left, and not that, you know, necessarily this is going to disappoint a lot of people, but there was something about the sex shops.
What do you mean?
It added a certain flavor. The weird thing is they're getting rid of the sex shops, but they're going to leave the billboards of half-naked women all over Times Square. You can go to Times Square and see 90-foot half-naked women in their underwear, but you can't go in and have a little private time.
Yeah.
What happened to that?
It has a museum of sex and no sex shops?
Right.
What the hell's going on
museum
here?
Sex in those billboards, man. Can you, I mean, just the scope of naked women in Times Square, but for some reason a guy wants to spend 50 cents or a dollar or however many tokens you need to have that kind of quality time with yourself, you know. Ferrucci, our writer, one of our writers, he just held up his hand, five tokens.
Five tokens, okay.
What it takes a Mike Ferrucci to spend the proper amount of time. Well, Mike, you're going to have to go to New Jersey or get a car or do something else. Sorry, buddy.
No, the battle's not over yet. The sex shops actually are going they're going to the next level. See, I know a little bit about this because I interviewed one of the lawyers who has represented sex shops over the last 10 or 15 years, because
this
started during the mayoralty of Rudy Giuliani. He really wanted to clean up that Times Square, Midtown, formerly seedy area. Now it's just all glass.
Yeah, the Disneyfication
of
it. It's unbelievable. People used to come from around the world to masturbate in the booths of Times Square.
That's right.
Professional masturbators from Sweden and Denmark would come here to compete with our local guys. No more. Those days are over. What other show on the radio can you go from Diane Arbus, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, to Sexodrome? Or to the, what do you call it? What was it? Peeparama. What were some of those ones down there?
Show World was built with an SBA, Small Business Administration loan, that was given to a guy named Matty the Horse Ianello.
There you go. This is a little New York history from the mouth of Mark Riley. And for those of you trivia experts, Show World is now the last factory. It's the last factory. And I've worked there, and you go in, you're sort of like, wow, this place is
smells funny in here.
It's got weird history.
Yeah.
And moving on, let's take a break. I also went to see the Max Ernst show. See, I'm going to bring it full circle. We went to masturbating in booths, and now we're back to Max Ernst, one of the original Dadaists who later created surrealism with a few other people. I had no idea that he was one of the great gatekeepers. I had no idea. I'd seen a few of his paintings, but man, Max Ernst is the man.
He's deep.
Hell, unbelievable. Yeah. They were like portals. They were portals into the unconscious, man. And I never had that reaction with a painting before. Maybe I'm growing up. Maybe I expect less. I don't know. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Air America Radio.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828 1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
20 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's the Morning Sedition Radio Show program here on Air America Radio. Dig this, man. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy coming up in a little while.
Yeah.
Newsweek investigative correspondent Michael Isikoff to talk about Jack Abramoff, who was a friend of Tom DeLay. How about that? Two offs in a lay. What do you know? Anyways, theology professor Janine Hill Fletcher is going to talk to us why there is no God. No, I don't know if that's what's going to talk about. She's going to talk about the possibility of life on Mars and how that could shatter fundamental notions about the origins of life. That's way later in the show, but hang out if
yeah.
you'd like to hear that. I will be in Cincinnati, Ohio, May 6th and 7th at Go Bananas. If you want information, go to GoBananasComedy.com. If you're listening to WCKY, there's some giveaways, some stuff going on with that in the Cincinnati area. Look forward to coming out there. I know it's a ways away, but I just wanted to start talking about it now just because I can. Anyways, so Riley, tell me what's going on. The John Bolton confirmation hearings put on hold for reason. Is this something we should be optimistic about as people on the other side, Riley?
In the words of Dan Pashman, cautiously
okay.
optimistic.
Okay.
Two things have happened. One, the Democrats apparently got together as a group and decided that they really wanted some written answers to some written questions from John Bolton, and they prevailed on the committee chair, Richard Lugar, to postpone the vote. The committee vote on his nomination to be U.S. ambassador to the U.N.
So this
until
is
next
the,
week.
The written portion of the test?
This is the written portion of the test. And this one may be a little difficult for Bolton to pass.
Okay.
Apparently, when he testified earlier this week before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he admitted that he used his job as a senior State Department official to obtain details about intercepted communications involving other American officials that were monitored by the NSA, the National Security Agency. Now, the identity of these officials is usually protected by law and very closely protected by law, and they're generally not even included in classified intelligence reports.
Huh.
So you have to ask yourself, why would John Bolton, an upper-level but not top-level State Department official, want to see these intercepted communications and know who the officials were that the NSA was monitoring?
Political reasons? Coercive reasons? You want to make sure he knew who to bully and who was working with him and who was working against him and what was going on, how to use it against people? What do you think?
All right, well, here. Let me give you his answer as to why he used it, and then you can see for yourself if you believe what he says.
I'll run it through my brain.
All right, John Bolton said that his only motivation had been to, quote, better understand the summary of an intercepted conversation. It's important to find out who is saying what to whom.
Uh-huh.
Are you buying it, Maron?
No.
No?
Well, I think it's all, it's, I think this guy's a sort of a secret kind of political assassin. I think he's the kind of guy that wants to, you know, bully people, have information on people, use it against them. And he's like, why should he be any different than any other politician?
You know, he is not only a bully. He's not only a guy who pushes intelligence people around to get, you know, the construct and the structure that he wants. Apparently, he's not above, you know, playing spy versus spy here. Remember that the state that he was working in the State Department's intelligence division. His real job was trying to negotiate nuclear treaties on behalf of the Bush administration.
So spy versus spy means that, you know, pitting, you know, one organization against the other to just watch with excited glee of a child.
That's what I mean. Why else would he need this information?
Right.
And it's not certainly not central to his job. Maybe if they were intercepting conversations of foreign officials or something, then you could say, well, maybe that's within the purview of State Department intelligence. It may be important to know if Musharraf in Pakistan, if the NSA intercepted a conversation
sure.
between Musharraf and some other Mubarak of Egypt talking about, you know, some nuclear cooperation. That you could make a case for.
Yeah.
But why would John Bolton need to get intelligence information about intercepted conversations of American officials?
Well, the implication is to manipulate intelligence.
Well,
that's basically what you're saying, right?
Well, the implication may well, let me not speculate too far.
Okay.
Let's set up one plausible scenario here.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
John Bolton wants to get the goods on people so that, again, he can get them, if he needs to have their intelligence information fit his construct. What better way to do that than to have some conversations that the guy had that the NSA was monitoring and then go to him and say, hey, man, Look at this.
Yeah.
You said
maybe,
this.
Can you name this tune?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a bestiality chat room they caught you talking
to? Yeah. What was your assignment there?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it sounds to me like, and again, this may not be the smoking gun that scuttles John Bolton's nomination, but I see it in the following terms. If they don't vote on him today, which they're not, that's progress.
Good.
And
good.
I'm a progressive.
And here's some more progress. The FCC is deciding that, you know, broadcasters have to reveal the source of video clips that they put on television when it comes off as news. You remember there was all this information about propaganda tapes that went out to local broadcasters, local stations. They threw it on the air as news. It turns out they were produced by the Republican administration's, front organizations to propagandize Medicare, Social Security, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And many of these local stations were not crediting the source, and it made it presented it as if it were a news story when it was really just right-wing propaganda. So now the FCC, in the strange action of actually doing something good, has said that, you know, you gotta reveal the source. I hope right on the air. I hope it says it right there. They got a, what do you call it, a rolling whatever at the bottom? What do you call that, a scroll, a flag?
A scroll or something, yeah.
Yeah, one of those things that distracts you from watching television with some truth.
Well, you know, this is the direct result of some work by Frank Lautenberg and John Kerry, both senators, one from Jersey, one from Massachusetts. They have been looking to introduce an amendment to a bill that actually today would require government agencies to do exactly what you're talking about. But see, what they were doing was even more insidious than just not saying. In some instances, they had these same people who were working for these different agencies, Health and Human Services. They actually had them in the business, they call it, tag out these reports with the name of the station.
Right.
So it's, I'm so-and-so for so-and-so in whatever town. So it really looks like a local newscaster, a local reporter.
They were doing network plugs.
Yeah.
They were like saying, hey, look, we'd be happy to send the department head down to sort of say hi to your people.
Want Rod Page to stop by?
Yeah, and do a little station promo. That'd be great. It's a crawl is what I'm thinking about, and maybe they'll have a crawl that says, look, this isn't about boobs. This is about you being a boob, and we're trying to, educate you as to the truth and reality of where this came from.
That would be nice, but probably.
Signed the FCC.
Yeah, right.
All right.
We're going to come back. We got some more stuff. We got a packed show today.
Gingrich takes on delay.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That was long. Payback the bitch, man. And sometimes it takes about, 15 years?
Yeah, well, think about what gas prices will be then.
Oh.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
And being afraid of life and being afraid of death, where the hell does that leave you?
The Mike Molloy Show on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Welcome aboard. How's it going? Sit down. You know, take some, Dramamine if you have to. You know, it's here we go. GOP leaders are turning on Tom DeLay faster than hitmen turn on the mob, my friends. One named GOP leader said yesterday, quote, all we have to do is give him enough rope. I mean, not give up hope, end quote. George Bush is turning on him a little bit. Certainly Newt Gingrich has taken shots at him. We're going to get those stories in a minute. But, you know, politics is often called a sport, so we thought, why not gamble on it, folks? Lay down a few bucks and see what happens. But not before we talk to an expert. Here's our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K. Street. Johnny, where's the action this week?
Hey, Mark, it follows me, baby. This week, everybody's betting on Tom DeLay to go down.
That's what I'm talking about. So where's the smart money, man?
Well, there's a lot of action being laid off. I'm telling you, this guy's a one-man final four.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of different ways you can go on this
one. All right.
DeLay goes down because the lobbyist paid for his daughter's wedding shower. 5-1.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
I got a couple of safe bets for make you some money.
Okay, what do you
got? You're not going to get rich on these, but they're practically guaranteed.
Okay.
He goes down for taking trips paid for by lobbyists. 2-1.
I want it.
That's safe.
That's me.
Yeah.
My pick, though?
Yeah.
DeLay taking others out with him.
Oh,
he goes down 2-1.
Yeah.
You can bet the farm on that.
All right.
But you want to make crazy money?
Yeah. You got my wallet out.
Look, go to the off the line bets. Right. This is where the money is.
Okay, what do you got?
Dead hooker in the trunk.
Ooh. Really?
Surprisingly, that's going off at 30 to 1. That's looking pretty good.
All right, all right.
Found in hotel room with Jeff Gannon.
Oh. Oh, wow.
70 to 1.
That's,
I'm not touching that.
You mean that's
that
longer
one.
Odds than the hooker?
I'm not touching that one in more ways than one, if you know what I mean.
I hear you, man.
Delay starts an amateur wrestling career under the name The Hammer. That's 1,000 to 1.
That's a long shot. Yeah,
that's a long shot.
I like betting on long shots, though.
Driven stock raving mad by the ghost of Terry Schiavo, past, present, and future. That one's changing as the weeks go by.
Everything's in delay.
Well, it started at 100 to 1. Now it's a little safer, 20 to 1.
So it's getting. It's a good bet.
It's a pretty damn good bet.
All right, all right.
You want to go long term?
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. What do you got?
This is a pretty sure thing.
All right.
Delay will end up penniless on the streets of Houston, where he'll be caught shoplifting a bag of stale caramels from a 99-cent store.
Oh, nice.
500 to 1.
Oh, that's pretty long. But, maybe a couple bucks. Why not?
Payoff is big, man.
Yeah.
The tricky part is the caramel. He pitched jelly beans, you're screwed. Got to be careful.
All right.
Your best bet is a trifecta, always.
Okay, okay. What is that?
Delay is driven mad by the ghost of Terry Schiavo, so he kills a hooker. He tries to revive her with stale caramels.
Okay, okay.
You can tell that story on your yacht. Million to one.
Million to one. Why not a dollar on
a
that?
A dollar on that?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So what's a buck?
Yeah. Exactly. What's the long shot?
I got to tell myself. I got to tell you the truth.
All right.
I told my kid.
What's the long shot, man?
Here's a long shot.
All right.
Bush coming out against Delay. Before there's an indictment.
Okay, yeah.
You hit that one, you can buy your own island. That's $50 million to one.
Oh, I'm definitely putting at least a dollar on that.
Hey, wait a minute, man. We're already halfway there.
Yeah, I know. Today he came out.
What, you got some information I need?
Today he kind of halfway, Bush kind of half came out against him.
Kind of.
They weren't good friends.
Those odds are going to change.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you don't have much time to get your money done on this because my source in the Senate says there's definitely a window and it's closing fast. So get the bets in, fellas.
All right, so who do we call? You?
Just call me, and I got to get out of here. I got another stop at Fox. There's tons of action.
All right, that was Johnny Casey.
Johnny Casey.
Beltway Odds Maker. We'll see him again soon next week with the new bets. With the new odds.
Johnny.
Thank you guys. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Be careful.
Say hi to your cousin Bo Deedle for me, will you?
Yeah.
Sounds a little like old Bo.
Take care of yourself, man. All right? Just be careful. See you later. That's Johnny K Street. So let's get into the real facts about Tom Delay. It's interesting that George Bush threw Scott McClellan. That was some interesting stuff. You got that piece there?
Yeah, we got a bunch of stuff on Tom Delay. First of all, the guy is obviously one of those people who believes, the best defense is a good offense. This idiot is now going up and saying, has a press conference in his office on the Hill yesterday to say that he's going to have the Judiciary Committee investigate federal court decisions on the Schiavo case. Now, the man had to apologize for some of the foolishness he said in connection with some of those decisions and about how the judges would have to pay for their behavior. And he now says he's going to tell Sensenbrenner, the head of the Judiciary Committee, look, we want to have these decisions investigated with an eye toward possibly introducing legislation.
Well, see, I think what he's counting on is that where his bread is buttered is with these religious fanatics that he's been pandering to since the beginning, and that ultimately he thinks that most of the conservatives in the House, whoever turns on him, is not going to be what's going to guarantee him his seat still in the future. Am I right?
Well, he may keep his seat,
but
the House Majority Leadership, I have a feeling that George W. Bush, this is the first, this thing from Scott McClellan is step number one.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful quote.
In an incremental, step-by-step, pre-calculated distancing of George W. Bush from Tom Delay, and by inference, from the religious right which Tom Delay actually represents.
Well, I think we actually have that, don't we, Chris?
The number of congressional leaders that he works closely with on the Hill and he considers a friend, sure.
And he considers Tom Delay a friend. Sure.
I mean, I think there are different levels of friendship and with anybody. So.
Look at that. He's killing with the press corps.
Yeah. The media got some yucks out of that one.
They weren't even buying that one. There's different levels of friendship. They were like, yes.
Sounds like a sitcom there for a minute.
There's news. Yeah, so this is a, this is phase one of the president saying, I don't really know that guy that well.
Well, you
know, I don't
want
that stink on me, Riley.
Look, Bush has never, we've said this before, Mark, Bush has never really been comfortable with the evangelical religious right. He has been comfortable carrying their water, but he's not comfortable with them as individuals. Remember that there was a time in 1999 before he ran, when he was getting ready to run for president, he was Karl Rove scheduled a meeting with some of these same people, and Bush didn't want to go.
Well, he wasn't sure then, but he's certainly gone back and forth over the years as to how much he's going to kiss their patootie.
He uses them.
He uses them, plays them
like a Stradivarius.
It seems to go both ways. I don't know how much he's playing them like a Stradivarius. Some days I don't know who's wearing the pants. You know what I mean?
Watch what happens when Bush begins to put some distance between himself and DeLay. They're going to hate it. But you know what? Bush is not going to back up.
Well, you know, Bush already came out in support of the judiciary's independence. All right. Now the judges are also coming up, saying, look, you know, you need an independent judiciary. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that later. But I think what's great is that Newt Gingrich, who DeLay helped usurp back in the day, is now like, you know, DeLay was one of the only living, you know, standing survivors of the Gingrich purge. But apparently, you know, Gingrich was just waiting for the sweet, sweet taste of revenge. You know, can we hear some of that, Chris?
I don't want to prejudge him. My hope is that Tom will be able to prove his case. But I think the burden is on him to prove it at this stage.
And do you think he's doing that?
I don't know yet. I think that the jury's out, and I think that he is going to have, you know, my only advice through friends has been that they have got to get everything out in the open, and they've got to understand that this is not something where fighting a delaying tactic does anything except hurt his case.
See, that's interesting because Rick Santorum said roughly the same thing on Sunday. And basically, Tom DeLay said, well, he wanted to thank Rick Santorum for standing up for him. And that's just a counter spin because these guys, in a very nuanced way, but not even that, it's not hard to see through, are saying, without saying, you know, the guy's done or that, you know, I don't want to be next to him, they're saying, hey, look, leave it up to the American people. I say that, you know, Tom DeLay, from what I've known, at least Santorum said, he didn't break the law, but leave it up to the people. So it's a very clever way of distancing without saying, hey, look, man, I want nothing to do with this. And Gingrich has got nothing to lose. And the thing he said next is even better, I think. Can we hear that other one?
He said that this is the liberal media going after him. Do you agree with that?
Well, that's the famous Hillary Clinton defense. This is the vast left-wing conspiracy as opposed to her description of a vast right-wing conspiracy.
So he's using...
I'm saying when you're being attacked, the first thing you naturally do is you describe your attackers. In this case, that won't work. DeLay's problem isn't with the Democrats. DeLay's problem is with the country. And so DeLay has a challenge, I think, to lay out a case that the country comes to believe, that the country decides is legitimate. If he does that, he's fine.
Payback's a bitch. That was with CBS's Gloria Borger. And I love this. I love it, Riley.
Hey, I'm wondering now if they're, if DeLay's actually gotten the knife out of his back yet.
I'll tell you, I'm just happy to hear that the great left-wing conspiracy is back up and running. Because we were sort of down for the count for a few months there. But it seems to me, according to Tom DeLay, the Democratic and liberal, vast liberal conspiracy is organized again and completely focused on bringing him down. I know I am. I'm just happy to hear that I'm part of a larger movement.
Well, you know, it's funny now that the DeLay is Velcroing the efforts of Democrats and good government groups, in addition, to have him step down as majority leader. They are Velcroing that to this media thing. Oh, it's the liberal media. And that's a trick that they use all the stinking time.
There is no liberal media. We are it.
Yes, we are pretty much it. And you know, we're kind of nice guys when it comes to bashing Tom DeLay. Compared to Gingrich, compared to Chris Shays, compared to Bush's own spokesperson, Scott McClellan,
they're
supposed to be his boy.
That's right. And Gingrich, evil though he may be, corrupt he may be, stupid he is not. He took a pretty good swag, and if there's any indication about what that guy knows about politics, I'd say that this is another nail in DeLay's coffin. Couldn't be happier to see the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack go down. Couldn't be more happy to see that happen. The arrogance, the corruption, the pride, the inability to come clean. See, that's the one thing. It's Santorum said what he said. Hey, come clean with the American people. Let them decide. And then DeLay said, that's my buddy Rick Santorum standing up for me. If you interpreted it that way, Tom DeLay, why don't you come clean? Tell us what's going on. Tell us what the truth is and let us decide. Don't sit there and say, take more action against the judiciary, try to throw up another smokescreen. Do what your friends are telling you. Let's hear your side of the story, man.
Well, you know, he's trying to make it sound as though he's prepared to do that before the House Ethics Committee, which has been deadlocked ever since Gingrich tried to ram through all of those rules that would have allowed him to stay on as majority leader even if he was indicted in Texas.
Yeah, well, here's a quote. Here, how do you like this? This is talking about House ethic rules. I'm especially pleased to support this comprehensive overhaul of House ethic rules and conflict of interest laws because it's an important first step in enhancing the ethical standards throughout government and adjusting compensation for individuals whose skills are essential to the quality of service government provides to the American people. It is my hope that honor will be restored to elected offices so that we can continue to work for the values that we have fought for in the past with quality representation in the future. Tom DeLay, that's the Ethics Reform Act of 1989. Now, they have become what they accused the Democratic Congress at that time
of
being.
They've become worse.
Much worse. $500,000. They can't even get any dirt on anybody. They're dying to get some dirt on the Democrat, but they can't even find anything.
Well, really. They try to go after Bernie Sanders from Vermont, whose wife, by the way, was getting paid through a consulting company that she set up. And other people use. I defy you to find one other person that used Tom DeLay's wife for any of the work that Tom DeLay did.
This is just what they do. This is how conservatives think. This is how the right works, especially the stupid right, the misinformed right, the people that take talking points from Rush and Sean, the people that just, spew out things like, any time you say, DeLay is guilty of corruption, they'll go, well, Clinton. It's like, no, Tom DeLay yesterday, but Clinton. No, Tom DeLay, the guy who is majority House leader right now, is guilty of, but Clinton, you shut up. It's got nothing to do with Bill Clinton. You got to get some new facts. You got to get some new talking points and try to defend the guy when the facts lead against him, without a doubt.
Here's the quote of the day. This is a senior GOP lawmaker who spoke on condition of anonymity about Tom DeLay. Democrats should save their money. Why murder someone who is committing suicide?
All right, we'll be back with gas prices, 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition, the highest rated, most respected news show in America. On Air America Radio.
800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
That's right, 52 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. There's the fax machine with the fax from the Streisand compound. Here's the liberal agenda for today. People, one, adopt Wisconsin feral cats. Train them to kill NRA members on site. Man, do you see the footage of that?
Yeah.
They make Wisconsin look like it's overrun by feral cats. Two, criticize... Now I'm going to have to go to Wisconsin and get some.
Yeah.
Two, criticize NBC's miniseries Revelations for being inaccurate. It shows the end of the world without a scene of Dick Cheney hunched over the nuclear football, naked and sweating. Three, tax day is tomorrow. Calculate a dollar value for the depreciation on your optimism. Last year was rough. Add a couple of zeros. Four, it's National Library Week. Discreetly slip a copy of Naked Lunch into the young adult section. That'll just get stolen. Do you guys want the most stolen books at a bookstore? Anyway. Five, today's brains just dropped this in the conversation. Thank God they're getting rid of the estate tax. Now I can leave my children the Palm Beach estate for the winter. Wake up, sheeple! They're beating us to death with a silver spoon! Hey, that's true, though. Jack Kerouac, all the beat writers, they got to keep them behind the counter here in New York bookstores because people rip them off as they're supposed to.
Whoa.
You have? Yes. Yeah, what'd you rip off?
I ripped off On the Road.
Oh, did you see that? No one rips off Steal This Book by Abbie Hoffman anymore because it doesn't matter.
Nah. That was like late 60s, early 70s, everybody.
Well, that's a sad moment when people look at Steal This Book and you're like, nah.
Nah.
I don't think I need this book. So... Poor Abbie Hoffman. Come on. The guy was, he did something. Anyways, I saw him after he came out from underground. He went on a speaking tour.
Remember
when he was underground? Yeah. It was kind of exciting. I was very excited to see him.
His wife Anita still lives in New York, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah.
I think she does.
Yeah. I think he had the bipolarity.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Gasoline prices, my friend, are cutting into everything. Because of the jack up in gasoline prices, which are at all-time highs right now, people are buying less stuff. So the economy's going into the toilet. So all you morons who voted for this president because he was able to scare you with bogus threats all you morons that thought it was going to be a safer country. How you feeling now? How you feeling now that the economy's going into the toilet and that you, moron, who voted Republican, might go broke and you want to declare bankruptcy? Sorry, can't do it anymore. Huh? It's unbelievable. You want to sue a corporation for screwing you? Sorry, can't. There's a cap on that. And now the economy's going in the toilet, and now ownership culture. So welcome to the culture of debt, my friend. The middle class one day is going to wake up and go, hey, I think I'm poor.
Well, you know, this is what a lot of people thought was going to come as the price of gas kept going up. That sooner or later, people would look at their wallets and say, you know what? We have to cut back on spending because it's going to cost me $60 to fill up the Denali's gas tank to go down to the mall.
And dig this. Do you think you're a friend of Bush or George Bush is your friend? You're paying $2.50 a gallon or whatever the hell you're paying wherever the hell you live? And, you know, you can't even afford to go out and buy things you don't need to keep the economy going. Well, dig this. Chairman and chief executive of Exxon, Lee R. Raymond, shared in the company's success. They had a banner year, apparently, with a $38 million compensation package. The largest U.S. oil company, Exxon, said that was yesterday that was reported, that the CEO of Exxon, which had the biggest year ever, on your back because you voted for this president, just got a $38 million bonus. How you doing?
All right? Now, he's 66 years old. You know, the rest of us at 66 got to make do on Social Security.
Yeah, if it still exists.
Yep.
You know, maybe it won't be Social Security. It'll be stock in Exxon, which by the time I get old enough, probably crap out.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Commerce Department reported yesterday that retail sales only rose 0.3% in March. Now, that's less than half of what they predicted. They thought it was going to go by 0.8. What that means is people are slowing down. People are saying, wait a minute, too many increases all coming at the same time. I got to stop my consumer spending. And that's rough in an economy like this, which is generally stagnant. Jobs are not being created at the rate Bush promised. And now folks are saying, well, first of all, it means they stay on jobs without raises, without increases in benefits for longer periods
of time. And inflation is outgunning it. It's outgunning their ability to make money. You know, they can't save anything. They can't spend anything. Now with gas prices, like, well, I'm going to go to the mall. I can't because it'll cost me $90.
Yeah, and here comes the rise in mortgage rates everybody's been talking about.
This is going to hurt me because I wish I understood more. I know I own a house out there in the West, and I know that theoretically I'm supposed to be selling it before I lose something on it, but people keep telling me, you know, hey, man, the Southern California market never goes bad. It's always good. People always want property here. Then they got a real estate agent telling my wife, oh, we can get this for this house. We can do this for this house. And she's like, no, I think it's going to be fine. Apparently it's been this way for years. I'm like, who told you that? The real estate agent?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm sure that they wouldn't want to protect them their own interest.
Well, the real estate business always operates on the premise that they're not making any more land. So even if it goes down in the short term, eventually over the long term it'll go up. So this is a good investment you got, man. In L.A.?
Yeah, okay.
This is the only place where, you know, real estate appreciates more than here in Manhattan.
I'm still hung up on making more land.
I'm
going to make land.
We got Michael Isikoff coming up in the next hour. We
talk
got
about
Ted
delay.
Kennedy. Yeah, talk about delay. We got Ted Kennedy coming up later.
Good morning, 6 past the hour, Air America Radio's morning sedition. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, bakers in Hawaii, bakers in Washington, bakers everywhere are listening to our show. I get email from bakers all the time, Riley.
Truckers, too.
Truckers and bakers. The late night folks.
And people listening in foreign lands.
Yeah, that's always good. It's like in midday in some places.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about those gas price hikes. People are paying too much at the pump, not buying enough stuff that they don't need, hurting the economy because of these gas prices. And you know, I read something just this morning that gang members in L.A. have started shooting people from the bus.
Oh, see, now there you go.
And that's bad. I mean, you know, when it gets to that,
Well, it's $2.46 a gallon out there.
You got to do what you got to do. You know what I'm saying? I was watching the news on the. Did you watch that on CNN? We didn't do the feral cat story a few weeks ago.
Oh, man, I saw that. That was disgusting.
They're trying to vote in Wisconsin, I guess it is, right? Trying to vote on whether or not it should be legal to go ahead and shoot all these feral cats. Now, you know me and my feral cats. And I had this moment this morning with my three dummies, with Monkey, Hissy, and Fonda. I had these moments where I was watching them eat, and I'm like, when I found you guys, you were digging through the garbage, eating half-eaten burritos, you know? It was awful.
That was then.
Yeah, that was then. Now it's like, you know, you're about to be eaten out of the garbage if you keep this up. I saw those cats in Wisconsin. It's so weird to see regular-looking cats because they don't look like wild animals. Even when there's 90 of them, they just look like cute little cats. You know what you got to do? I got my friend Kirsten on this, too. She's out in Jersey City, all right? And after she heard my story about my cats, who are all coming around, they're fine. I know a lot of people like to hear about the cats. They're developing personalities. The youngest, the cutest one that would never let me touch her. Now, if I touch her around the eating area, you know, on her own volition, she's got to decide how and, you know, what's going to happen. But I'm actually...
Oh, she dictates terms.
Yes, she dictates, and that's not unlike, you know... That's just the way life is, I guess, in all species on some level. And I'm not trying to be sexist or judgmental. It's just my life. All right. But the other one, Hissy, will get on my bed while I'm sleeping and just look at me. And it will not really let me touch her, but I'll wake up and she'll just be sitting there going, oh, so that's what you're doing, huh? Having a little sleeping, you know, and just sit there looking at me. But then when I look at all these feral cats on the TV, it makes me sad. But my friend Kirsten goes to Jersey City. She rents an apartment in a house. Mm-hmm. She said there's like 20 behind her house.
Really?
So, yeah, it's like a problem everywhere. So what she did and what she got to do and what you usually can do, if you have the heart and disposition to do it, is usually with the some animal protection agencies, you have to look into it. You know, some of them offer programs where you can get trained on trapping the cats and bringing them in to the ASPCA or somewhere like that to get spayed or neutered, and then you return them to the wild. All right, granted, this doesn't stop the numbers in terms of what exists now, but it will stop the population from growing.
Yeah.
We did that around my house. I mean, I had I trapped the mother, and this woman came and picked her up and brought her and had her spayed. Is it neutered? What is it? Women are...
I don't know. I
women,
think it's speed.
Females are... Why wouldn't I know that? Jonathan, Clutch Larson, could you tell me in my head, are females neutered or spayed? Exactly.
Yeah.
Spayed. Now, you know, that's not a stupid thing. That's just a thing I just didn't know.
But see, now, that apparently is not good enough for Wisconsin. They just want to blow them all away like it's a Death Wish movie.
It was kind of funny and sad at the same time because there was hundreds of people in that room that they were showing in the city council meeting or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a contingent wearing the orange hats and the orange vests ready to go.
Yep.
Literally.
Lock and load, baby.
It's time for target practice. And then there were the other side who, you know, looked like us.
Don't,
you know,
kill them.
You know, crying women, concerned vegetarians, people.
You know what?
Animals.
You know what upset me about those reports, Mark? And I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting too sensitive about these things, being around you for a year. But it seemed to me as if CNN went out of their way to give people the impression that the entire state of Wisconsin was verge of being overrun by these cats. There'd be cats on the streets of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
There'd be cats getting on the bus.
Yeah.
There'd be cats collecting tolls at the booths.
Yeah.
Cats running over the cats fishing off the bridges. I mean, it just looked like cats were everywhere. And that's something that media sometimes on purpose, sometimes inadvertently, gives the impression when they just keep showing shot after shot after shot of you know, cats looking like disoriented and not knowing where they were going. And I'm thinking, is it really that bad?
Cats on the bus. Yes, it is, Riley. Some cats, apparently, they'll work for very cheap.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of
and they don't pay their fare. When they...
A lot of people are giving up. They're losing their job to cats.
Oh,
so there's
okay.
All this whole weird feline action thing that's going on where they're trying to move, you know, cats into jobs that, you know, people aren't. It's bad.
Led by the spirit of your dead cat, Butch.
Exactly. Well, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that when you see these cute cats on TV and when you see feral cats, they look like just you know, sweet cats.
Yeah.
But they're difficult. They are wild animals, and it's very hard to cross that line. I mean, I had to learn my lesson the hard way. I had to, you know, I trapped these cats, brought them into my house, and realized, my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
You know, 'cause they're crazy. They are completely wild, and you just don't assume that from a, you know, dealing with a house cat.
Okay, I don't say that there isn't a problem, but I really think that there ought to be a humane solution short of, you know, turning the citizens of the state of Wisconsin loose on a bunch of cats. You know, catch them, neuter them, spay them. Eventually, they're going to die. They're not immortal.
Well,
they're
so
gonna, you know.
Yeah, if you're listening to us on the mic in Madison, I mean, take some action if you can. I mean, reach out to somebody because there is a way to get these cats taken care of.
Yeah.
It'll take a generation or two. But a lot of people are arguing that they're killing some of the indigenous birds, that they're causing trouble, that they're throwing off the ecosystem. That there is a real problem. It's like an infestation almost because they are just like any other animal and they've gone kind of wild. And the problem is there's a lot of people feed them and they keep coming around and they just think they're cute little cats, but they are wild animals and I don't think there's anything wrong with feeding them, but someone ought to get them neutered and spayed.
Spayed.
Trap them. They've got to take care of all of them. Got to take care of both of them.
Now, is spayed past tense? I don't know how do you say spay?
Spay. That's the present tense. Spay.
Yeah.
To spay.
To spay.
Yeah. I still feed a cat in the back. I don't even know what it looks like anymore.
Really?
Yeah, because the mother was somewhere back there, the kittens I have, and now I put food out every night, but somebody eats it, but I have no idea. When did I become a cat lady? When am I one of these people? If you see me, you know, walking down the street pushing a basket full of, you know, plastic bags and cans and stuff, help me out, will you? Just tell me that it's time to, you know, to move or do something. I don't know. Go to Vegas, Florida.
Why? No cats there?
No, someplace where, you know, I can live outdoors and not worry about the winter. I don't know what I'm talking about. So we got Michael Isikoff is coming up in the next in this hour. Looking forward to that. We're going to talk to him about Jack Abramoff, the lobbyist who, you know, might drop a dime on Tom DeLay. I hope so. I hope that DeLay goes down in a matter of weeks. We've also got an interview we did with Ted Kennedy. Talked to Ted Kennedy yesterday. And he's like, you know, in prime form. Looking good, clear, seems, you know, full of the piss and vinegar. Is that what you say? Full of the beans. He's, you know, he's got a lot to say. And
yeah.
We tried to get a couple words in edgewise. I think we did.
Oh, he had plenty of juice.
Yeah, he did.
Plenty.
So we'll get to that. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this horrendous day in response to, basically, there's, you know, today is designated the Hate Gay People Day by a group, several groups, you know, one of which is tied to James Dobson, who made some statements about the judiciary that we'll also talk about. So look forward to that. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
978-800-603-9978. Hey, what do you know? 19 past the hour, Air America Radio. Morning Sedition here with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
It's magic.
It is magic. That's what we do here every day. Morning Sedition is magic. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition, don't be stupid. It seems that the conversation about cats has generated some opinions, and we've got a couple of calls here. Exciting. David, are we good? Here we go. Not going to happen. Sorry. phone issue. Maybe it'll come, maybe it won't. All right, Chris, you got anything there?
It looks like we have the dream diary. How about that?
Uh-oh.
All right, here we go. My therapist told me to write these down. Here's my dream from last night. I'm out with Dan Pashman. Big shocker. He takes me into a sports bar. I say, what are we doing here? And he says, we're partying, dude. Don't you want to party? I say, dude, I shouldn't be in here. He says, come on, man. Let me buy you a drink. You got to loosen up, man. I say, nah, thanks anyways. Then Pashman says, dude, didn't you hear? There's a new pill that cures alcoholism instantly. He hands me this small white pill and says, here, just chew it and wash it down with this. He then gives me a shot of Wild Turkey 101. A cure, huh? That would be awesome. and I guess I do need to wash it down. I don't want to choke. What the hell? So I put the pill on my tongue and throw back the shot. Wow, I feel both tipsy and cured and smart and funny and loved. This is great. I can drink whatever I want. I yell, bartender, line them up. And so I start slamming back shots and laughing too loud and singing along to the jukebox and pretending to like sports. Women are starting to look really good who didn't look at all good 10 minutes ago. I'm dizzy. I have no sense of time. But that's okay because I'm cured. I grab on the Passman's shirt and I say, dude, do you know where a guy could score an 8-ball around here? Passman looks at me with these red glowing eyes and says, you just laid one. Go ahead. Snort it. You've been cured. I look behind me, and there's an 8-ball of coke already cut and fluffy on the mirror. After snorting all of it in like 5 seconds, Passman leans over and says, that was a Spearman Tic Tac I gave you, you dumbass. I own you. I notice skin dripping off onto my shirt in a neat polka dot pattern. I look at Passman. Steam is seeping from his pores and from his eyes and from his tail, his hideous red pointy tail. He looks on me with disgust and says, you're worthless and weak, and your mayonnaise is disgusting. I woke up and my bed was filled with deviled ham.
Ah, yesterday's mayonnaise discussion did come through, huh?
Okay, so what are we going with here? Okay, that's David on line three, isn't it? No, Ellen. Can we talk to Ellen? How are you, Ellen? What's going on?
Hi, Mark and Mark.
Hi, Ellen.
So you want to talk about the cats?
Well, I could talk a lot about it. But in a nutshell, after hearing about this and giving it some thought, I really think that this is a creative way of the government trying to pass the cost, or the municipalities, whoever it is, trying to pass the cost of taking care of these animals by euthanasia or, you know, whatever, onto us.
So I think that's a good point because, you know, I know that when I looked into it, when I had my cats, I looked into, government programs that would enable me to get the cat spayed or neutered or actually even trap cats. They used to subsidize people here in New York, and a lot of that has been shut down.
That's right. That's right. I live just outside of Chicago and had 3 rescued cats for 18 years myself. And my mother, when she passed away, had 18.
Oh, wow.
So you're taken about 40 into shelters. So.
Wow. So good for you. So you think that, obviously, you know, there is a way to do this, and hopefully that maybe the government will step in as opposed to the hunters up there in Wisconsin.
I doubt it. I'm sure that they'll leave they'll bear the cost on us. But
what do you think they should do with it?
If you juxtapose that to the possibility of them either getting picked up and then euthanized by the vacuum box in the pound, which is not friendly, or being mandated, I believe that any pounds that receive government funding are mandated to release some animals to the universities for
research.
Things.
Testing.
All right. Well, we'll see. So what do you think they should do up there, Ellen? Do you got any ideas?
Well, I would hope that, like you said, if they're not going to step in, maybe, I don't know, maybe the citizens could come up with a program, or just everyone that owns a cat, you know, get it spayed and neutered. It's $40 or something?
Oh, yeah, you got to do that, sure.
Yeah.
And that you can, I don't know what it is. I think people get lazy. Thanks a lot. Because when you get the kitten, you got to wait. It has to be a certain age.
Does it?
Yeah, you can't just do it. Some vets will do it when they're really young, but I think it actually has to be a couple months old to even get surgery on it if you want to do it right. Because there's some people believe that you got to let it grow a little bit or you'll stifle it somehow.
Yeah. I would just hope there would be a humane way to deal with this kind of issue, short of shooting them. I mean, euthanizing them in a vacuum box isn't much better, quite frankly. There are some places, I'm sure across the country, that are animal shelters that pledge not to kill animals that come under their care. There's one here in New York, out in Long Island, North Shore Animal League. They pledge they don't kill anything.
Yeah, I know, but they also don't have any room, man.
I mean,
you call those places, I know there's some places that pledge they don't kill animals, and sometimes they don't, but sometimes I'm not sure I believe them. But North Shore, I called them, and they may not kill any animals, but they're not going to take anything but, really cute, cuddly kittens. Because I called, I had these 3 cats, and they weren't even 8 weeks old, and I wanted to put them somewhere aside than...
And they turned you down, North Shore?
Yeah, everyone turned me down. I mean, I understand these places are overrun, but I mean, it's like you can't bank your hopes on that. There's just too many damn cats.
Well, I actually went to get a dog there. Uh-huh. I mean, I had a different experience because I was going to, And we had that dog for like 12 years.
Well, the weird thing is I also got turned on to some other place upstate, like an animal habitat. Like I heard that there was But I tried to get hold of them, and I couldn't get hold of them. It's not easy to unload cute little cats. Especially,
no, you're right. You know,
and one of the problems is these are feral. And maybe I shouldn't have said that. You know, maybe I shouldn't have said, yeah, I've got some wild animals that are completely untrainable
and
cannot be given away because they'll hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And I was going to lie about it and just try to give away my cats, but how is someone not going to know? You know, when the cat attacks you, you know, how are they not going to know?
Just keep me in a cage, man.
All right. So we have Michael Isikoff coming up, and I wanted to talk a bit about this day, that this counter event to the Day of Silence.
Which, you know, this is starting to make me mad, this anti-gay stuff.
It
really is starting to get on my nerves.
This is the Alliance Defense Fund, and it's endorsed by, Christian Ministries Focus on Family and Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. This is a day primarily happens on college campuses where people who believe that homosexuality is a sin or wrong are encouraged to give out leaflets, to wear T-shirts that say, you know, homosexuality is wrong, it's dangerous, it's a sin, it's this and that. The way they're couching this or framing it is that, hey, if they have the right to show they believe that it's okay, why don't we have the right to show our views? Well, you do, but don't lie about it. These aren't views. You think you're right, and that the only way is to stifle, to be intolerant, to shut it down, to be mean, like gay people don't go through enough with this stuff on a day-to-day basis.
Look, the bottom line is the Day of Silence was organized by students. This nonsense was organized by adults to manipulate students.
Right.
This is not something that was student-generated. The Day of Silence was begun by kids, for kids.
And this is parents who are willing to religiously retard their offspring to believe in their narrow-minded way of looking at
things. It is disgusting.
Yes.
And I'm getting sick of it.
All right. We got Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up. Michael Isikoff is coming up. We got a big show. We got Ted Kennedy as well.
Yeah, man. All coming up for you here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Once listen to any news whatsoever, so you're either dumb or you're cruel.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
And now, the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When last we left Mark Maron, Blanche had proven that the document linking George Bush to Osama bin Laden was a fake, and that secret agent Henriette Mantel might be the one who faked it.
Mark, what's wrong? What did Blanche say?
I'll tell you back at your apartment. Let's move.
All right, we're here. Are you going to tell me now?
Man, you drive like a maniac. It took like 2 seconds to get here. How the hell do you still have a license?
What are you doing?
I'm booting up your computer. Relax, dollface. You look more jittery than Bush reading his poll numbers.
But why? Maybe I can find what you're looking for.
Don't move a muscle, sweet cheeks. The party's over. The jig is up. The fish is in the fryer and the dew's on the corn. The clouds sweeping out the circus tent and...
It's all over when the fat lady sings?
I try to avoid that one.
Oh. Oh.
Lady, you're more exposed than James Gannon's old website picture.
Good analogy.
Thanks, man. I know what you're looking for, Mark. The fake memo she wrote. Time to come clean, Pam Hoagland of Sweetwater, Texas.
Pam Hoagland? Wait, I found it. The memo between Bush and bin Laden. You faked it on this computer. And the worst part is you put it in a folder labeled Mark Dumbass. You'd think you would have at least picked Mark Moron. You know, Mark Maron, Mark Moron. Seriously, it works a lot better.
Damn you.
I had my suspicions about Ms. Hoagland myself, so I did a little investigating of my own. Turns out she's not an agent at all. She's part of the Bush conservative neocon death cult.
Can I use that?
It's all yours, buddy. She had us all fooled. Well, almost all of us.
Bitch, we had a spa day together and everything. I even paid. I want those towels.
Barbara Boxer, how many people have the keys to this place?
The Bush neocon death cult was just using you as a pawn, Mark. They wanted you to go public with that story about Bin Laden and Bush being linked. Over and above, their families doing oil business together for years, and Bush flying Bin Laden's relatives out of the country after 9/11, and, of course, Bush Sr.'s membership in the Carlyle Group, along with members of the Saudi royal family who've been accused of financing the Taliban.
If you published that letter, it would have made the left look like a bunch of crackpots and paranoid idiots. That's just what they wanted. It's called getting rathered. And even worse, it would have obscured the one thing Bush could never have revealed. What's really going on with him and Bin Laden?
All right, everybody out. You can't do a thing to me. You can't arrest someone for trying to make a fool out of somebody, or else Monica Lewinsky would be doing hard time.
Hey, now.
Beat it, Marin. And as far as the two of you are concerned, Heil Bush! Heil Bush! I'm taking those spa towels.
So was it all just business between you and me?
Let's put it this way, Mark. My girlfriend and I had a good laugh about it.
You mean you were gay and you slept with me?
No, that happened afterward. Right afterward. That's cold.
All right, nobody move. Bernie Carrick! Did they just leave the door to this place wide open? What are you doing here, Carrick?
Y'all know too much and haven't been in the scene in months.
That's because you're old news, Carrick. Drop it, or I'll fill you full of more lead than a New Jersey river under new EPA guidelines.
Colin Powell!
Mark, Bill, Barbara, get out of here. I'll deal with these two.
You bet your life I'll get out of here. I'm getting claustrophobic.
Come on, Mark. Let's go get some tasty cakes.
I don't think so, Bubba. I'm tired of dancing around this thing. You know all the hiding places in the White House. I want to get up close to the man.
What plan does Mark have in mind? How did Bill Clinton just happen to turn up at that apartment? Or Barbara Boxer? Or Colin Powell? And refresh my memory. Who was Bernie Carrick again? Find out next time when we hear Bernie Carrick tell Pam Hoagland.
How would you like to do something kinky with a former nominee for Homeland Security Chief?
How would you like a lesbian to throw up on your shoes?
So that's a yes?
That's next time on The Shadow Government. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of Mark Maron, Advice Columnist.
Our next letter says, Dear Mark, I'm desperately, desperately lonely. People at my job take me for granted. None of them realize that deep down, I just want someone to hold me in their arms and tell me I'm beautiful. What am I to do? And it's signed, New York Confidential. But the return address says Wayne Gilman.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mark. I'm never going to hear the end of this.
Beautiful? You want someone to call you beautiful?
Shut up, Riley.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Oh, shut up, Riley.
I forgot we did that. I felt left out for a minute there.
39 past the hour. We're back. It's a morning's edition here. Shut up, Gilman just came in and said, shut up, Riley. I thought that was going to go on forever.
Hey.
You know, you guys are going to be talking about that for years.
Yeah, bring him back in. No, we got to
We're going to have Michael Isikoff on the phone in a few minutes, hopefully. Is he here? Oh, great. So let's set this up a little bit. Michael Isikoff has written a piece in Newsweek about Washington lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who is the guy that's got the goods on delay, so to speak. Let's talk to Michael now. Good morning, Michael Isikoff. How are you?
Good morning. Pretty good.
Good morning.
So Jack Abramoff, is he? Can you set him up a little bit for our listeners that might not know him?
Yeah, Washington's super lobbyist. One of the really and it, until his downfall a year or so ago, about as close to Tom DeLay as anybody in town, certainly on Washington's K Street corridor. This is the guy who was DeLay's main contact on K Street, raised money for him, hired his ex-aides when they left town, and used his access to DeLay to become the most compensated lobbyist in town. In fact, he was often ranked number one in terms of fees. About a year or so ago, his world began to fall apart. He has been accused of defrauding tens of millions of dollars from Indian gaming casinos, Indian tribes, professionally humiliated. Emails have been released by John McCain's committee showing that he would refer to his clients as monkeys and idiots. Anyway, he is now the target of a Justice Department criminal investigation,
right,
and is facing indictment.
Okay.
So the question is, this guy is going to get indicted, or looks like he's getting indicted.
Yeah.
What does he do, and what do people do when they get indicted and they look at the real prospect of going to prison? They very often look to cut a deal, offering up somebody else or others in exchange for a lighter sentence.
Yes.
And that's the key ball to watch in the entire Tom DeLay saga.
Mike Lizikoff, what is the difference between what you just described as what Jack Abramoff does, lobbying,
yeah,
and influence peddling? I mean, you know, there's a K Street corridor. People make billions of dollars a year doing this kind of lobbying. And I think to most Americans, it just comes across as some, you know, the worst, most crass, most base kind of influence peddling.
Well, there are specific allegations in the case of Abramoff that have got the Justice Department's attention, that he redirected money he was collecting from the tribes into purposes other than what it was they had paid him to do, including private business ventures, political contributions, reported or unreported, all sorts of mysterious nonprofit entities.
Tom DeLay's pocket.
Well, we don't know that, but that we have no evidence of that.
Okay.
But look, the trips you've been hearing about that have been at the center of the DeLay ethics controversies, all of them, the common denominator is Jack Abramoff. It's Jack Abramoff who's on the trips. It's Jack Abramoff's clients who pay for the trips through circuitous means, going through this cutout nonprofit. It's not Jack Abramoff who's there, who's always playing golf. And the specific scene that I introduced the piece is Abramoff last week is having lunch, bitter, angry, frustrated. Everybody's abandoning him. Everybody's walking away from him, pretending they don't know anything about what he was up to. And Abramoff is saying, look, everybody's lying, and when it comes to DeLay and his aides, who are distancing themselves from Abramoff as fast as they can, his comment was, those SOBs, they're lying, DeLay knew everything, DeLay knew all the details.
Michael, does it strain people's credibility to think...
Credulity, excuse me.
Does it strain credulity for people to think that Tom DeLay took all of these trips without knowing exactly where the money came from? I mean,
well,
the money
came from Abramoff. I mean, that's the important point. I mean, maybe I didn't connect the dots quite as clearly for you. Abramoff is central to the DeLay trips. He's the central figure. In fact, if you had a functioning house ethics process, in which a House Ethics Committee was investigating, making inquiries into what the deal is on these trips. Was DeLay really accurately reporting where the money was coming from? Was he accurately reporting what he knew and what he didn't know? Abramoff would already be questioned under oath. He already would be up there having to answer because it's Abramoff, very often, who's setting up, not very often, in almost every case, who's setting up the trips.
Okay.
So he is the key player. He's the guy who hasn't spoken. The key question is he going to seek the bargain? And we don't know that yet.
All right, Michael Lizikoff from Newsweek. We're going to talk to you when we come back about, apparently Jack Abramoff is denying saying some of the things that you have cited in your piece, and
right,
we'll address that when we come back at 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air. MorningTradition.com. Air America.
Mantis Tiller Cultivator. Put the fun back in gardening. Call now 1-800-211-8001. That's 1-800-211-8001.
One of the most powerful men in Washington.
It's beneath contempt.
Famous for his aggressive bare-knuckle style of politics.
If we do not act,
she will die of thirst.
Tom DeLay faces investigations in Washington and Texas.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral, universal, and I believe the source of our greatness.
Government watch groups are stepping up their calls for Tom DeLay to resign his post as majority leader.
The abuses we've seen in recent days do not reflect the views, policies, or fabric of this nation.
$57,000 all-expense-paid trip may have been funded by lobbyists, which is against the rules.
Is it ethical?
Three of DeLay's associates have been indicted.
Accusations of illegal campaign fundraising and improper ties to lobbyists.
We have the truth on our side.
Third DeLay trip that has been called into question.
And it is the truth.
Connection with illegal fundraising.
That will win us this argument.
Two campaign organizations that financed his re-election paid $500,000 to his wife and daughter.
Is it ethical?
I feel great about it.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral and the certain knowledge that we are all ultimately responsible for our actions.
Hi, it's 50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're on the phone with Michael Isikoff from Newsweek. His article is called With Friends Like These, a lunchtime chat with a lobbyist close to Tom DeLay suggests he may be headed for hotter water. That is Jack Abramoff. And, Michael, you quote Jack Abramoff in your article saying these SOBs, DeLay knew everything. He knew all the details. And according to the Houston Chronicle, Abramoff is denying that he ever said that. What's up with that?
Well, it's not surprising. You know, these were private comments he made, not to me, but to somebody else. And all I can tell you is, you know, we absolutely stand by the story that he said these things. We know from others that he, in fact, has expressed similar thoughts about DeLay and about his predicament in recent weeks and recent months to others. Now, you know, I think the key question is, was he and is he ready to sit down and bargain? And
right, he's getting cold feet.
And, you know, the question is, you know, I mean, there's no question he's not there yet, so therefore he's not yet ready to confirm that that's what he has to say. I think this is going to be a situation where it has to play out in time. He's got to see exactly what the Justice Department has got against him, what his likelihood of avoiding prison is.
So he's got to lobby for himself.
A decision there. Yeah.
So now, let's speculate a little bit. Now that you know you've got Rick Santorum sort of saying, you know, DeLay's got to come clean, and you've got, you know, Gingrich saying that DeLay's got to come clean. You've got the president distancing himself from DeLay at this point in time. In your eyes, is there any chance you think DeLay might step up and actually say something about this in public?
Well, actually, you know, he had his press conference yesterday in which he's saying he's not commenting anymore on any of the ethics issues. He's going to reserve that for the House ethics process. Of course, there is no House ethics process at the moment, so there is no, it's a pretty safe position to take at the moment.
So what's it going to take to get him to come, what's it going to take to bring DeLay down?
Well, I mean, you know, that's both a political question and then that's the question, you know, in terms of the legal and ethics process in the House. Right now, as I said, there is no ethics
right.
process in the House. So he can't get chastised or censured anymore. He has been chastised on three other occasions by the House Ethics Committee. That's one of the reasons that the House Ethics Committee doesn't currently exist, because DeLay's people changed the, you know, Republicans changed the rules,
right.
stacked the deck to make it harder for people to bring ethics complaints. So, you know, for one thing, there has to be something that revives the House ethics process, and that's, you know, that's problematical. And on the legal front, you know, this Abramoff investigation has to proceed further, and we have to see this. Also, of course, the grand jury investigation going on in Texas by Ronnie Earle.
Right.
So you got that ball in the air. And then finally, you know, which is probably overarching at all and very much interrelated, is the political dimension. You had Chris Hayes come out, call for DeLay's to step down last weekend. That's not terribly surprising. Hayes is one of the few moderate Republicans left in the House. He's kind of a lonely guy in that sense anyway. He runs in a district where he barely won re-election, in which he gets hammered. He's Greenwich, Connecticut. He gets hammered for his ties, you know, for the House Republican leadership. Now, are others going to step forward? You had these kind of ambiguous comments by Santorum. You got to wait. You know, I think this is, we're at a situation where, you know, it's sort of finger in the wind. People are waiting to see. They want to see whether, you know, they, I mean, House Republicans, how much trouble is Tom DeLay going to cause for them? Meanwhile, you have DeLay and his people rallying, playing to the base, you know, mounting a full-court defense. He's going to be the keynote speaker this weekend at the National Rifle Association Annual Convention in Houston. This is a guy who's going to his core constituency, social conservatives, and saying, I'm your guy. I'm under attack by the liberal media, by liberal Democrats. Rally to my cause.
Yeah. Now, Michael Isikoff, when Scott McClellan, White House spokesman, says about Tom DeLay that, yeah, he's friends with President Bush, I think there are different levels of friendship with anybody. Is that moving away from Tom DeLay in your judgment?
I think that's a very cautious comment. That reflects what I was telling you before. People are, you know, it's a finger to the wind.
Okay.
People are waiting to see.
Well, Michael Isikoff, thanks for joining us. It was great talking to you.
Anytime.
Thanks.
That's, Michael Isikoff from Newsweek magazine. It's funny. You got to laugh with McClellan's line.
Yeah, because it's hilarious. That's why.
That thing's got some legs comedically.
Yeah, really.
So it's interesting. It is exactly what he's doing. Tom DeLay is going to his core base, religious fanatics, gun nuts, people who hate gay people.
Yeah, that's starting to really make me angry.
It's interesting that's the choice he's making, as opposed to sort of really discussing what he's being accused of with the people of this country. He's willing to just say it's a liberal conspiracy, it's a Democratic conspiracy. They're out to get
media.
Me.
Don't forget the media.
Take care of me, you guys. I'm your guy. I'm Jesus's guy. I'm gun owners' guy. I'm the guy that'll help facilitate all of your agenda. Don't leave me now.
Yeah. And at the same time, he's bending over for people that own sweatshops and sex shops.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like we got Ted Kennedy coming up, and we've framed these guys. DeLay's one of them as anti-constitutional, anti-American traitors in a way.
They're extremists.
One step away from being, radical, from being traitors. Yeah, they're definitely extremists. They're definitely radicals. And when we talked to Ted Kennedy about their attack on the judiciary, he didn't have any problem with that language.
He was down with your frame.
He certainly
he was.
Definitely
down with
he
your
certainly
frame.
Was. And he was, it was great to hear him so angry, It's interesting when senators get going either it's going to be real or it's not going to be real. But, he was definitely real and he was definitely angry. And we'll hear that when we come back.
That's right. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the Senate since 1962. He knows what the deal is. And we'll be talking with him next here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, morning sedition here on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Mark Riley's here with me.
Hi.
We spoke to Senator Ted Kennedy yesterday about the crypto fascist zombie brigades trying to usurp the judiciary, the radical right, and what they're willing to do and say to try to take over this government, to try to go against the Constitution. Oddly. But in a very satisfying way, Ted Kennedy did not disagree with me. So here's our chat with Ted Kennedy yesterday.
Right now, what are the most classic examples that you see of the Republican leadership's abuse of power?
The Constitutional Convention, which wrote the American Constitution, it's very clear what our Founding Fathers wanted. And the Founding Fathers wanted a balance of power in the executive and in the Senate in terms of deciding who is going to have lifetime appointments in the federal judiciary.
Right.
Any child that reads the debates on it comes out with that conclusion. What we are being faced with now is the radical leadership among the Republicans that want to change the rules of the game in the middle of the game and say, oh, no, we want to be able to not only nominate but to insist on our people. It's effectively an abuse of power. It's a struggle by the Republicans to grab power in the United States Senate and to silence all debate and turn the Senate into a rubber stamp.
Senator,
and that isn't what the Founding Fathers wanted. That isn't what 225 years of the history of the United States has been about. And the American people don't want us to surrender independent balanced judgment to a radical, power-seeking a group of Republican extremists.
Well, Senator Kennedy, that's a great point. And do you find that the real conservative Republicans have lost control to these un-American religious extremists that are trying to take over the party?
No question. It is no question about it. Look, the great Justice Harlan of the Supreme Court defined the Republicans and conservatives as preserving institutions. What we're seeing now is the radical right destroying the institution, in this case destroying the ability of an independent judgment to be made by members of the United States Senate on the nominees for the federal judiciary, and that has been their right over the 225 years history of this country. And it is basically a power grab. Look, I'm be supporting an amendment to in this supplemental bill that is providing funding for the soldiers over in Iraq. The administrative conference, which is basically a nonpartisan conference, has requested some $12 million to protect judges because of the rhetoric of the radical Republican extreme that is supporting what they call the nuclear option, and that is to change the rules of the game. Can you believe that now the administrative conference of our judiciary, which made up of Republicans and Democrats, are actually requesting funding from the Congress of the United States in order to protect judges because of the inflammatory language that is being done by Tom DeLay and by Republican senators. That is completely alien to undermine the independence of the judiciary.
Now, Senator, an article that was recently published in The Hill suggested that the nuclear option is really a litmus test of the Republican Senate leadership. We've heard some noise out of Majority Leader Frist that there might be a compromise here. We've heard, I saw one report that said one of your colleagues on the Democratic side, Senator Bill Nelson of Florida, is also talking about the possibility of compromise. Do you have any faith that some middle ground can be reached here?
There is no problem with the current confirmation process if we don't have these extremists being nominated by this president. We've approved over 200 of these judges. They have been basically, most of them, very conservative judges. I voted for them. Many of them have been pro-life judges. Many of them have been very conservative judges, and we have voted for them. What we're talking about are the 10 judges that are really the extreme and have extreme views. They're judges like William Haynes, who was the architect of the administration's torture policy, or William Pryor, who has said that the Supreme Court should cut back on important voting rights laws and protections against discrimination, or William Myers, who's a lobbyist for big mining companies who wants to roll back environmental protections. Look, there's nothing wrong with the confirmation process. It's worked and worked well. It's the extremists in the Republicans that want to abuse their power as being in the majority. They want to abuse their power and their authority by changing the rules and put in these radical extremists whose judicial views are way, way outside of the mainstream. And that is something that we're not going to permit.
Senator Kennedy, there's a lot of liberals and Democrats who think that you and Robert Byrd and Barbara Boxer are like the only ones who are willing to take on the Republicans and take the political heat that goes with that. Is that true and why?
No, I think by and large, the American people are beginning to understand when we have these statements that are made by Tom DeLay, which in effect are threatening the judiciary, American people aren't buying that. When you get this group of political leadership in the Republicans, in the House and in the Senate, that are condemning the Sandra Day O'Connor and Justice Kennedy, two Supreme Court justices that were nominated by Ronald Reagan. These are Ronald Reagan Supreme Court nominees, Justice O'Connor and Justice Kennedy. And they are being roundly criticized for being activist judges and are being condemned by this group. This is the kind of kind of abuse of power and extremist views that we're battling.
They're a step away from treason, aren't they?
Pardon?
These extremists, these religious extremists, they're just a step away from treason.
Well, they are talking about impeaching the Ronald Reagan's Supreme Court nominees. That shows you how far out of the mainstream they are. And I don't think the American people are going to buy it. We've approved 96% of this president's nominees. There are 10 that are clearly outside the main judicial stream. People around the world admire the American democracy, and the reason they do is because of our checks and balances. The president has the power of veto. We have the power of discussion. We are the envy of the world. That isn't good enough for an extremist group of Republicans and Republican leadership that want to change that concept. American people shouldn't go for it. I don't think they will. This is going to be the most important battle that we'll have.
Senator, one of the people who's, you could call a point man in all this, is the House Majority Leader, Tom DeLay. You've been very critical of him. Do you think he's going to stay on as House Majority Leader, or are his days numbered?
Well, I think he is certainly fighting to stay on as a leader, doing everything he can to maintain his position, and it seems that he's kind of intimidated the Republican Party in going along. There's one or two the members of the Republican Party that have been critical, but he's basically effectively eliminated the ethics committee that could have been able to make a judgment on his conduct. He's had the votes to be able to do that. I don't think the American people are going to be supportive of that kind of sort of arrogant wielding of authority and power. I don't think they buy into that. I think they wouldn't buy into it for the Democrats. They shouldn't buy in for it for the Republicans. I think what we're seeing now is sort of a return to the what happened with Speaker Gingrich when he just went too far. Contract America just went too far, and the American people fell out of favor for it. Now we're seeing a repeat effort of an arrogancy of power and abuse of power by Republican leadership. I don't think the American people are going to buy it. I don't think they should. The issue is going to be what they call the nuclear option that is changing the rules of the game in the consideration of these judicial nominees. We need to hear from the American people what their views are, whether they feel that the Senate of the United States should follow what the Founding Fathers wanted us to be, or whether we ought to just yield our authority and our independence to a radical group of extremists. And that is the issue. That's the nuclear option. That's before us. And I hope your listeners will be in touch with us and let us know how they feel.
That was Ted Kennedy yesterday talking to Mark Riley and myself. I enjoyed talking to him.
I enjoyed talking to him. You heard what he said, people. He was talking to you.
I like being talked to by him.
Yeah. No, but I mean, he said something that's very important, Mark. He said that people out here who agree with this position need to contact their legislators. They need to contact their congresspeople and their senators.
Yeah. And when we come back, the attack continues. The Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade, one of the big ones focused on family, founder James Dobson, said something about judges yesterday. It was hard to make out what he was saying through his hood, but we're gonna talk about that when we come back at 16 past the hour.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Our estate variation. Call American Life, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
Hey, what's going on? 21 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition's Air America Radio program.
Yeah.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. You know, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. But thank God we have this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator, because we like to use it every day to translate some headlines. So let's crank it up and do that. All right, from the Los Angeles Times, Sharon denies any plan to bomb Iranian
nuclear plants. Put that in there. Sharon denies any plan to bomb Iranian nuclear plants. Translation, Sharon cancels trip to Tehran Mall on May 8th. From the Los Angeles Times, crude oil drops to nearly $50 a barrel. Crude oil drops to nearly $50 a barrel. Translation, Bush's shrewd energy policy drops prices from extortion to outrageous. From the Whittier Daily News, high school suspends boys for wearing lipstick and eye makeup. That's it. High school suspends boys for wearing lipstick, eye makeup. Translation, Duran Duran Club ordered to meet off campus. Yeah! That's it. So let's talk about this, Riley. James Dobson, the founder of Focus on Family, one of the classic Christo-fascist zombie brigades, is still making statements about, you know, about
judges. Yeah. I think he's elevated himself to grand wizard right now.
That's for sure. So why don't we hear that first, and then we'll go into the judge's response.
Well, I heard a minister the other day talking about the great injustice and evil of the men in white robes, the Ku Klux Klan that roamed the country in the South, and they did great wrong to civil rights and to morality, and now we have black-robed men, and that's what you're talking about.
What an idiot. That's James Dobson, the Reverend James Dobson, whatever Reverend means in this country, a Focus on Family on his radio show. Now, look, you know, he's making a comparison to the KKK and the Supreme Court. What an idiot. I mean, and this is Focus on Family, and they are part of the supporters of the day of, you know, the counter event to the day of silence called the Day of Truth, aimed at mobilizing students who believe homosexuality is sinful. Focus on Family is so behind denying people civil rights that it's ridiculous that he would even have the audacity to make a comparison like that. This guy, Focus on Family, and James Dobson are the direct legacy of the Klan in this country, without a doubt. All they are doing is trying to deny people their civil rights in the name of what they interpret as Christianity, which most people, most Christians, if you ask them, would not feel that they represent the Christianity that they believe is to be true Christianity. These guys are fascists. They have gone almost as far to say to encourage violence towards members of the judiciary. It's pathetic, Riley.
Well, yeah, this is the oldest trick in the book, Mark.
Okay.
You take, you know, a guy, you know, an evangelical Christian, decides to use imagery, you know, from some of the worst elements of racist America, and then try to apply that to a body that actually has a black guy on it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, it is absolutely insane. And, you know, I am no fan of Clarence Thomas, but he's not a Klansman. Okay.
Right.
The idea that James Dobson or Tony Perkins or any of the rest of these clowns think that they should determine. The course of the and the structure of the judiciary in this country is the height of arrogance, and you know every African American in this country should be outraged that this man would compare the U.S. Supreme Court to the Klan. That's just ugly, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but he did say that the Klan did use crosses in their ceremonies.
Yes, he did say that.
He might have set them on fire and put them in people's wands, but they're still religious symbols. But, you know, the Supreme Court Justices Anthony Kennedy and Clarence Thomas on Tuesday defended the independence of federal judges and suggested that criticism is simply part of the democratic process. Kennedy added, when it comes to being criticized, I defer to the expert Clarence Thomas, end quote. And Clarence Thomas said, quote, I know all about being criticized. I was one pubic hair away from doing a show on Court TV for scale, so don't Tom delay me.
That's the only time anybody on the court has ever deferred to Clarence Thomas,
yeah,
believe me when I tell you.
But in all honesty, they did make a statement, the justices, that they did say that this is part of the democratic process. They did stand up for their independence. They did do their job in representing the judiciary branch of this country. As being one of the, you know, the checks and balances to maintain democracy in this country.
And, you know, the Supreme Court justices are actually, and mind you, this is Kennedy and Thomas. These are not radicals we're talking
right.
about here. But they did ask for more money to add 11 police officers to the squad that protects the court because they're really worried with some of this kind of heated rhetoric that's going on, including stuff from members of Congress, ladies and gentlemen, whether they apologize for it or not. They are worried that they may end up being the target of an attack here.
And why shouldn't they be worried with people like Senator Cornyn from Texas making statements that are basically insinuating or pushing people of marginal religious fanatic disposition to take violent acts against them? I mean, they should be scared and they should be fortifying themselves, but they should also be representing themselves, which they have, as we are the judiciary branch. We do not, kowtow to ideological whack jobs.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to take up a very interesting topic. We're going to talk about how science affects religion with someone who knows when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
There you'll find books mentioned on Air America Radio offered at huge discounts.
I know that.
AirAmericaRadio.com, your source for everything Air American.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're going to have a religious discussion in a few minutes. I'm excited about that. And I think we might have one now. I don't know. You never know where this is going to go. But since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone, once again, is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. It's God's TV, and he's got his finger on the remote.
Okay, yes.
Right,
so
now
you've been watching TV, Lawton. Is that what you're saying?
No, Mark. Something much more meaningful and profound than that liberal cesspool you call network television.
Uh-huh.
Last night I watched Revelation on NBC,
mm-hmm.
and even you'd have to admit that was a life-changing experience.
I'm
so moved.
I was asleep, Lawton. What was it about, my friend?
The end times, Mark.
Uh-huh.
The apocalypse. Good versus evil.
Yeah.
Storms.
Right.
Famines. Miracle babies.
Uh-huh.
Signs from Jesus.
Uh-huh.
That and commercials for SUVs, software applications.
That sounds thrilling, exactly. Lawton. Sounds thrilling. Yeah.
I will ignore your customary sarcasm,
what?
Mark. This is too important. Listen, in the movie, there's this teenage girl. She's been struck by lightning and appears to be brain dead.
Mm.
But then she starts quoting ancient scripture.
Mm.
Now, who does that remind you of?
Suzanne Summers?
Harry Scheibel, Mark. Do not mark me. The woman's passion and suffering was so profound that echoes of Terry showing up everywhere, even in a miniseries, starring a bland second-tier leading man like Bill Pullman.
It's Lawton. I got to be honest with you. I think it's a total coincidence, Lawton.
Signs and prophecies, Mark.
No,
signs and prophecies.
God, come on.
I distinctly heard Terry's voice behind you reading the liberal agenda on this show yesterday. She was saying, Lawton, avenge me.
Oh, that's so nuts. You're
right
sick.
Behind you.
You're
yesterday.
Sick. You're sick. You're nuts, Lawton.
I'm sorry if the truth frightens you, Mark, but you can't deny conservative thinking and attitudes are spreading into your liberal media hellhole.
Oh, come on.
We're
going
to clean house. It's time to take out the immoral trash. Goodbye, desperate housewives. Deadwood, you're Deadwood.
Okay, that's very clever. Now, you know why shows like that are on the air there, Lawton?
Gay agenda?
No.
Secular humanism?
No.
Food stamps?
No. Because people like you watch them. You,
like me.
Yes, you conservative red staters make all this noise about family values and culture of life, and then you sit out at night and flip on Sex and the City. You're all a bunch of hypocrites.
You're running scared, Mark.
No.
The conservative tide is crashing down on your head.
Oh,
tsunami. The networks are answering directly.
Come on.
Us now.
Come on.
Me personally.
Come on. That's ridiculous. You ever heard of something called sweeps, my friend?
Is that some sort of drug reference?
No. Sweeps
are drugs?
No. They are the period each fall, winter, and spring when television ratings are counted and studied and advertising rates are reset. With big, dumb movies like Revelations, the networks are just trying to hook the largest audience they can so they can raise their advertising rates.
No. You can't reduce everything to money, Mark Maron. The networks care. I'm speaking to them now.
Oh, come on.
We're communicating.
Lawton, the networks don't care about conservative values. They saw how many people went to see The Passion and said, hey, they'll buy anything as long as we throw in a free Jesus.
Oh, no, no. I thought Jeff Zucker at NBC had accepted Jesus. I thought he loved me.
Jeff Zucker doesn't care about you. You're just a number to him, Lawton. Wake up, my friend. Oh, not with the crying. How many times does this have to happen?
TV's all I have, Mark.
What?
Stevie doesn't care. Where does that leave me?
Okay.
Alone on the couch watching the test pattern till I fall asleep.
All right, buddy.
When they canceled Friends, I had to go to the hospital.
Oh, my God.
The Friends are my only friends.
All right, okay, man.
I grew up on TV.
Okay, all right.
Now you're telling me they don't care. Come and knock on my door.
Oh, no.
We've been waiting for you.
No.
Where the kisses are.
All right.
Are you company too?
No, don't sing, man. Just stop, all right? I'm begging you. Please, Lawton, calm down. Calm down, dude. Just calm down. I understand. Oh, no. Right, here we go.
You know, if God came on TV, would you even recognize him? He will not look like James Gandolfini.
All right. Goodbye, Lawton.
No soprano.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you. Do it!
All right. Okay. Thank you. That was Lawton Smalls, of course, from Planet Bush. Now we're going to have a conversation in a real sense about religion and whether or not the discovery of water on Mars and the possibility that there may be life. This is found out there was a report in February that there might be indications that there's life on Mars and how will that affect belief. So joining us now in studio, Fordham University Theology Professor Janine Hill Fletcher. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, what Lawton was talking about is a very real thing, and it seems that before we get to Mars, let's stay in the United States. It seems that the sort of eschatology, the end times frenzy is upon us. Is this something unusual? Is this something that happens generationally? What do you think?
You know, it seems to me that the eschatological vision suggests a critique of the way things are.
Okay.
And some population of Americans feel as though their way of life is threatened, and this casting it in the religious light is one way of really raising that to the surface.
So that it's sort of a control thing that they're freaking out, they're afraid, and you know I just wonder, is there any chance that the rapture could happen, you know, regionally or just to individuals who believe in it?
Well, from the perspective of those who do embrace that, some of us will be left behind. So the rapture, the taking up, you know, only happens to those who do believe. The rest of us will be, in a sense, eliminated.
Okay. So we're eliminated. There's no chance. I was going to say, I don't mind being left behind if I can still go get coffee and, you know, if there's still internet service. I don't have a big problem with that. So you're saying did you watch Revelation?
I did watch Revelation.
And a theology professor?
Well, it's interesting. It overlaps with this issue of life on Mars because the structure of the program really presuppose this conflict, deep conflict, absolutely irreconcilable conflicts between science and religion.
Okay.
So it portrays portrays the rational scientists as completely opposite of the religious fanatics. The religious people end up looking, quite honestly, a bit silly.
Yeah, to be honest with you, they don't seem to mind that. I mean, I think that's all relative to where you're standing. If you're one of them, I mean, there was a period in time, you know, a couple of weeks ago when that horrible thing was going down in Florida, where those pictures were going out to the world of these, you know, the circus, the revival circus in front, you know, snake handlers and people crying and waving their arms. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Europe's going to see this. I'm a little ashamed.
And as someone in academic theology,
yes.
There's another kind of way of approaching theology or way of approaching a religion that really is more mainstream, that doesn't see this conflict between religion and science and faith and reason. And it really is since the Enlightenment, philosophers have been asking questions about God, and the theological thinking that has developed out of that rational mode of thought really has made it into mainstream theological thinking. So, you know, that to characterize all religious people as this program did, and as many, you know, within the wider public do, all those who embrace, you know, religious ways of being or religious ways of thinking as fanatical, as anti-rational, as anti-science, really just doesn't match the reality of the way that for many people, religion and science, even in kind of high academic theology, religion and science really are two conversations that are mutually informing.
It would seem as though, I guess for television purposes, it's a lot easier to cast things in very, very stark terms.
Absolutely.
Good and evil, this one's wrong, this one's right. Where do you see the common point between science and not just religion, but specifically Christianity?
Well, the common point for me in my own thinking is this sense of humanity exploring what we can know about the universe that we live in. And that there are certain limits to that. And science recognizes, the whole pursuit of science is that we know a certain amount of things and we're still discovering things. That's, in my understanding, that's really the whole, what drives science. Well, for me, that's what drives theology as well. And what drives kind of new and emerging and interesting patterns of Christian thought, where we recognize we don't have the whole answer. We don't know all there is to know about this divine mystery that Christians call God. And I think that part of the problem is that many Christians forget that that's an essential part of the tradition. It's in the scriptures. It is part of kind of the theological framework that Christianity is embedded in.
You think they forget? You don't think they're misguided by, you know, fanatical leaders and by, you know, Christo-fascists who want to retool Christianity into a political movement?
I read it a little bit less sinister, perhaps. And the reality is that our world is ambiguous. It's frightening to people. The fact that we don't know kind of what's next and science opens up new things to us, I think that's threatening to some people.
Right.
And so this sense of needing something and reading the Bible or reading Christianity in a particular way that allows for some certainty, but that to me takes away the point.
Right.
And the point of religion is to explore the mystery of our existence.
Yeah, but people, like you said, are looking for control. And a lot of what has to do with these Christians, and I get accused of not drawing the line properly, of characterizing religious people in a broad way as being fanatical, which I know they're not all that way. But I think it is an issue of control and fear. And I want to talk to you when we come back about how this, you know, this possible discovery of the evidence of life on Mars, you know, should affect religious thought. We are talking to Janine Hill Fletcher. She's a theology professor at Fordham University, and we'll be back with her after this. It is 45 past the hour.
Morning Sedition. More than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com. Morning Sedition. On the air. Online. Listen at the office. At morningsedition.com. Air America Radio.
Wait for 30 days. Call now. 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Forty-nine past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America. We're coming in for landing here. Janine Hill Fletcher is our guest. She is a Fordham University theology professor. We are talking about now, what does the possible existence of life on other planet in any form, how does that, you know, what does that, how does that challenge religion? How does religion deal with that? Because since I think we are supposed to be so special and so unique in this universe here on this planet.
Sure. Taken from a biblical perspective, there are hints within the Bible that we don't, not even hints, but explicit statements that human beings don't know everything there is to know about God. One of the first kind of foundations in responding to this is that religious people, Christians, should be reminded, right, of the fact that God, the God of the Bible, is the God, in their understanding, that created all of reality. So why not life on Mars?
Right.
And why, what's the exclusion there? And the other fundamental piece is that God's work in the religious frame of reference, God's work is beyond what humans can comprehend. And the contemporary people who, you know, find life on Mars somehow religiously disturbing are, again, forgetting pieces of their own tradition. And the ancient writers of the Hebrew Scriptures really have that sense that God's work is beyond what humans can understand.
So you're saying, why not let that word beyond represent a lot.
Right, and the Book of Job is a great example where Job is in a kind of a conversational relationship with God and has really had all these horrible things happen to him. It's really questioning God's work in the world, and God essentially responds in this poetic and personified manner. God responds, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth?" And goes on for four chapters, really kind of outlining how these ancient people thought about the workings of the world, the workings of nature, as something that humans can't control, as something that humans don't understand. So why wouldn't this be another example of some element of our universe that we don't know about, we can't control? We'll perhaps try to control life if it's found on another planet.
Is the real threat if we accept that, what if they show up and they're a lot smarter than us and they know God better than we do? And people are going to be like, oh, man, see, now we got to kill them.
That's the real question. The real question is, if there was intelligent life, what would the response be? And if we're thinking about the pattern of our own encounter with other forms of human existence here on Earth, we don't have a really great track record of encountering otherness and embracing that.
Some religious factions in this country can't even handle the French. They think you're going to handle people from other planets or intelligent life from anywhere.
I wonder about the idea of God and not being able to understand all that God does. But was there any provision made for incremental understanding? Obviously, throughout the centuries, people have become more knowledgeable about the world around them. Is there a theological construct for that?
Thomas Aquinas talks about the incomprehensibility of God, but the way that Aquinas frames it, he says God is incomprehensible because God is supremely knowable, but there's just so much there is to know about God that humans could never comprehend the reality of God. And I like to think about that in terms of this opening up of new ideas, new information, that these could potentially be, a religious term, but revelations of the infinite mystery that brought everything into existence. So there are elements within the tradition that would say, not that God is unknowable, but that God reveals God's self in the created world, in the human person, in a variety of forms, not in the signs as they have been described in the show like Revelation,
right,
where it's,
some people see that as a colossal cop-out. You have people like my producer, Clutch Larson, who insists that, rational, investigation can explain everything, even no matter how far you get out into the unexplained universe, that there is an explanation.
That we haven't arrived there.
Right.
Okay. But at the edge of the universe, right? The fundamental question of faith is at the edge of the universe, as we explore all there is to explore and rationally explain all there is to explain, is there something beyond that? Is there something greater than our own limited capacity for understanding?
Yeah, there's a guy going, shut the door.
Or the photographs of Diane Arbus, for example. Yeah. Beyond mine. No.
No, I understand what you're saying, that if you just keep taking it, but that's still that type of thinking,
But the other question is, yes, there are rational explanations, but for some questions, I would have to say, maybe there aren't rational. When does the human person begin, right? When does someone become a person? When they're a baby in the womb, while they're not speaking, they're not engaging, are they a human person? When they're 1 year old, when do they become a human person? Okay,
right.
So this question that science can say human beings come from the joining of an egg and a sperm, but when does the human person emerge there? Okay, so questions like that where theology attempts to say, yes, science brings us so far, and yes, there are rational explanations for the elements within our universe, and theology, mainstream theology, embraces the scientific pursuit. But I think that it also says science and rational explanation brings us so far with the bigger questions. Why are we here? How did we get here? What does it mean to be human in this universe?
But you're basically saying that that science and religious thought can coexist and evolve together.
I'd say that's the position of most mainstream theologians.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Janine.
It was really
pleasure.
Great. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks. I enjoyed the time myself.
It was very engaging. We bat this stuff around a lot, and I'm glad you were here to help us out with that. So there's the sound of the fax machine from the that's the fax from the Streisand compound. Here's the today's liberal agenda. So write these down. 1. Adopt Wisconsin feral cats. Train them to kill NRA members on sight, if you can. 2. Criticize NBC miniseries Revelations for being inaccurate. It shows the end of the world without a scene of Dick Cheney hunched over the nuclear football, naked and sweating. 3. Tax day is tomorrow. Calculate a dollar value for the depreciation on your optimism. Last year was rough. Add a couple of zeros. 4. It's National Library Week. Discreetly slip a copy of Naked Lunch into the young adult section. 5. Today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. Thank God they're going to get rid of the estate tax. Now I can leave my children the Palm Beach estate for the winter. Wake up, sheeple. They're beating us to death with a silver spoon. Again, thank you again, Janine Hill Fletcher. Riley, great seeing you.
It's been a great show today. And tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit about taxes because tomorrow is, in fact, tax day. And tax expert David K. Johnson, favorite expert, is going to be joining us. And we're going to talk to some people that got a lot of money, but they don't want Bush's tax cuts. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, good people.
Yeah, good people. Tomorrow here on Air America Radio. Great show, man.
You too, Riley.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
By now you've heard that Canadian prescription drug prices are up to 85% less expensive than they are in the U.S. Mary Purcell heard and ordered her Plavix and saved $114 on a 90-day supply. If you're buying any prescription medication, it's time to call Advocare at 1-888-471-4721. Canadian snowbirds have been using Advocare for years to have their medications mailed to their favorite travel destinations. AARP magazine ranked Advocare one of the top pharmacies in Canada. They're the only Canadian pharmacy with a U.S. non-resident license. The state government of Illinois has concluded that Advocare's procedures are exceeding the U.S. government's requirements. You can save, too, by calling Advocare at 1-888-471-4721 or visit their website at pharmacyonthenet.com. Your medications are guaranteed to be delivered right to your door, and you save up to 85%. Compare that with what you're paying now. It's so easy, and the money you will save is incredible. Call 1-888-471-4721 or log on to pharmacyonthenet.com.
If you could cut your mortgage payment by 45%, would that make a difference to you? If you're like most people, it can make a difference of hundreds of dollars a month and thousands of dollars a year. That's why the home loan experts at Quicken Loans created the revolutionary new Smart Choice interest-only loan. It's the flexible mortgage that can lower your payment up to 45%. Homeowners nationwide are calling Quicken Loans at 800-396-9711 to discover the difference for themselves. If you have a mortgage you can't afford not to call, you can see a dramatic drop in your payment even if you've recently refinanced. Call 800-396-9711 now to see how Quicken Loans can lower your house payment up to 45%. Quicken Loans is an equal housing lender. State licensing information available on request. In today's economy, you can't afford to wait. See the difference Quicken Loans can make for you. Call Quicken Loans, America's home loan experts, now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning, I'm Wayne Gilman. If you think House Majority Leader Tom DeLay has ethical problems, consider the case of some American surgeons who are now enlisting the elderly and sick to receive inferior organs. Not all within the nation's medical community are totally sanguine over the plan, but reports say some heart surgeons are demonstrating that thousands of people die needlessly because the nation's transplant system needs an upgrade. Those surgeons believe that if would-be recipients, often considered too old or too sick, were given what has been described as lower quality hearts, their survival would be greater. Many of the organs spurned by transplant hospitals are usually from people who are 50 years of age and older and whose hearts have stiffened with age and are more likely to fail. New phenomenon has spawned talk of ethics with no clear solution in sight. Most American Catholics think the late Pope John Paul II should be made a saint. Quinnipiac University Polling Institute also found that Catholics in the U.S. are largely in step with the Pope's opposition to abortion and the death penalty. 8 of the 10 Catholics who answered the poll say the Pope's traditional stance on many issues was good for the Church. Many expect the new Pope to change some of the traditions. Institute Director Maurice Carroll says a slight majority would open the door to women priests and marriage for priests. The majority also say they think the Church should relax its ban on contraception. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay apologized yesterday for using overheated rhetoric on the day Terry Schiavo died, but refused to say whether he supports impeachment of the judges who ruled in the case. DeLay backtracked, as White House spokesman Scott McClellan said. President Bush considers the Texas Republican, who is battling ethics allegations, a friend, but suggested that the Majority Leader is more of a business associate than a social pal. I think there are different levels of friendship with anybody, McClellan said. At a crowded news conference in his Capitol office, DeLay address remarks he made in the hours after the brain-damaged Florida woman died on March 31st. I said something in an artful way, quoting him, and I should not have said that way, and I apologize for saying it that way, DeLay told reporters. Shortly after Schiavo's death, DeLay said it represented a failure of the legal system. DeLay's statement also said the time will come for the men responsible for this to answer for their behavior. DeLay said at a news conference that he was eager to appear before leaders of the House Ethics Committee and give everything I have in connection with allegations of misconduct. And Lebanon's pro-Syrian prime minister stepped down yesterday, abandoning efforts to form a government to lead the country to general elections, but said there was still time to hold a poll as expected in May. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
News brought to you by Orkin Pest Control. Orkin offers free inspections to help prevent termites from eating you out of house and home. Remember, if it bugs you, bug the Orkin Man at 1-800-ORKIN-MAN.
In the game of life, what's in your credit report can make all the difference in the world.
The Smith family going for a home loan. The referees are reviewing their credit report.
Wouldn't you like to know what's in your credit report before you apply for credit? Now you can. Log on to freecreditreport.com and get your credit report instantly online for free.
Upon further review, the loan is approved.
Be prepared for the biggest games of your life. Log on to freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
But, Dad...
Tyler, we've been over this 3 times. There'll be no adults at Ed's house Friday night. No party for you.
But the whole class is invited.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy. But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
You were so stubborn.
Well, now you know where you got it from.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
You love your garden. You love the fresh produce, the money you save, and the pride that comes from working the soil. But it's never been an easy chore. Until now. I'd like to send you a free information kit that shows how easy gardening can be with a Matus Tiller Cultivator. It's so light and easy to use, you can cultivate an entire average-sized garden in only 20 minutes without breaking a sweat. And at only 20 pounds, anyone can handle it. But in spite of its light weight, it'll cut through sod and even the toughest, rockiest soil with ease. The Matus is so easy to handle, even in tight places. Even in hard soil, it'll dig down 10 inches deep. It's so much fun to use, you'll want to plant a second garden. But the Matus does more. With optional attachments, you can aerate and dethatch your lawn, edge around walks and driveways, even trim hedges.
Call 1-800-211-8001 now for our complete information kit and a free video showing how easy it is to use the Matus Tiller Cultivator. Put the fun back in gardening. Call now 1-800-211-8001. That's 1-800-211-8001.
There's a hot new technology that will transform your TV. A TV expansion system that reads your movements. Zavix Interactive Technology is here. Get off the couch and into your games. There's Zavix Tennis, Zavix Bowling, and Zavix Baseball. Perfect for the whole family. Roll an actual bowling ball, work up a sweat playing tennis, or swing an actual baseball bat. Zavix senses the speed and direction of your motion. The results are up to you. Go to Zavix.com for details. And now get a $30 mail-in rebate when you buy the Zavix board in one game. Zavix Games. Get off the couch and into the action.
The Mike Malloy Show.
How hated is this thug, this American murderer, this warmonger? Huh? How hated is he? When Bush's face appeared on TV screens throughout Rome during the ceremony, many in the crowds outside St. Peter's Square booed at a funeral for the Pope.
and they booed this idiot.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Cincinnati's mayor,
a TV news anchor,
and Jerry.
Now he's back.
Springer on the radio.
Bringing you passionate, progressive talk on today's top issues. And now, the voice of the middle class, Jerry Springer.
Hello, America and everyone across the sea. Jerry Springer here. Let's play radio. Tomorrow, Patriots Day. That's right, Patriots Day. It's the day we all happily get to pay our dues to live in the greatest country in America. Can you imagine the President of the United States getting on television and prime time and says, ladies and gentlemen, this is a day we can all feel the love of our country, the commitment to our country. And so, everyone, as you go over your tax returns, send in as much as you can. This is great. Let's help this greatest country in the world. Let's show our love of country. Let's put our money where our mouths are, where our mouth is. Well, you know, it's absurd even as I say it. You know, you're never going to find a politician willing to say that. And yet, I say it only somewhat facetiously. Look, I wish everything in the world was free. You know, I mean, who doesn't? You think it's fun to, you know, to have to pay for anything. Wouldn't it be great if everything, oh, you like this car? It's yours, buddy. Nah. One of the reasons, you know, we like Christmas, we run down, see what's under the tree. It's a gift. Our parents had to pay for it. We didn't. Well, you know what? That's not going to happen. We're not going to hear that speech. We're not going to hear that attitude. Because people get elected and politicians pass laws so that their buddies don't have to pay as much in their dues or don't have to pay dues. Let the other guy pay. Tomorrow's tax day. Now, let's tell the truth about how we really feel. The truth is, number one, it's no fun to have to do, particularly if you're doing your own taxes. Now, I confess, I don't do my own taxes anymore. I get somebody else to do it. But a lot of people still do their own taxes. I used to do my own taxes. I remember when I was first elected to city council in Cincinnati. This was back in 1971, so we're talking 34 years ago. I was making $8,000 a year. That was the salary for city council. $8,000 a year. Now, admittedly, $8,000 then was, considerably more than it is today. But it was not a lot of money. You know, I was living in an $85 a month apartment.